It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Jenny Mattingly. And today we're here to talk about federal risk management and specifically a little bit of enterprise risk management. And I've got some experts from the community to join me today. We've got Dr. Karen Hardy, who's with us from Office of Management and Budget. We've got Todd Grams from Deloitte's Federal Sector and Dr. Doug Webster from Cambio Consulting Group. Welcome and thank you for being here today. And very quickly, I just want to do a reminder to our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. Thank you for being here all and talking about something that I've found is a really interesting subject and really very timely, given everything that's out there in the news about the federal sector right now, is the idea of risk management. And before we get started, I did want to take a minute and ask each of you to tell a little bit about yourselves and how you got into this field. Karen, why don't you kick us off?
Certainly. I've been involved with enterprise risk management for about 10 years now, and I've had the opportunity to design and implement enterprise risk management frameworks at multiple agencies. I am currently doing an assignment with Office of Management and Budget, working with the Office of Federal Financial Management, and I've had the extremely gratifying opportunity to help to revise OMB Circular A11, which introduces enterprise risk management to the federal government. So this is a very—
For the first time.
For the first time.
That's right.
So I've had opportunity to actually author a new section within that particular within a particular circular.
That's great, and we'll certainly talk about that later on in the show. And Todd, what about you? You've been doing this for a while as well.
I have, Jenny. I actually joined Deloitte as a director in April of this year in our Audit and Enterprise Risk Services division. Before that, I had spent 34 years in the federal government, 20 of those as a senior executive. Mm-hmm. And in my last two positions in government, one at the Department of Veterans Affairs and the other at the IRS, I played key leadership roles in standing up enterprise risk management programs at those two agencies.
So it's certainly been something we're hearing from the government that's been around for a while, but it's a growing topic. It feels like a growing field. And okay. Doug, thank you for joining us and give us a little bit of background.
Sure. Well, thank you for the opportunity. After retiring from the Air Force some 20 plus years ago, I've been working in management consulting in various areas, including risk management. But when I had the opportunity to go to the Department of Labor as a CFO late in the Bush 2 administration, I saw that as an opportunity to use it as sort of a platform to help move messages across the federal government. And I had a great interest in enterprise risk management, so I began to reach out to a number of folks. And Karen Hardy was, in fact, one of the folks that I reached out to early on. And we put together this ad hoc group called the Federal ERM Steering Group back in 2008. And we put on the first ever Federal Enterprise Risk Management Summit. And in 2011, the group of us got together and we decided to incorporate into a 501c3 professional association, the Association for Federal Enterprise Risk Management, and I served the first 2 years as the president. So we've been working at this as a community collectively, and I've seen a lot of progress over the years as a result.
And it's really interesting because one of the things as I've been digging into risk management is, and I hear you all talk about, you know, the financial side of things, is risk management really, in some ways, if you go out and Google risk management, first thing that comes up is finance. And so, but it's broader than that. This is broader than just some sort of financial framework, and really enterprise risk management is what is much broader because it's an agency-wide or an enterprise-wide undertaking. And so the question is, I guess, what's the difference between risk management versus enterprise risk management, and how does that play in there?
Well, I will first start off by looking at the definition of enterprise risk management and then giving an example of how that differs from traditional risk management, especially in the federal landscape. I mean, there are a variety of technical definitions of ERM, and most definitions are based on the practice of risk management in a particular industry. However, regardless of those definitions, we found that the outcome of ERM is meant to be the same. For example, you have the Institute of Internal Auditors and the Risk and Assurance Management Society. Both of those organizations offer well-thought-out definitions of ERM. A definition used within the federal landscape states that ERM is a discipline that addresses a full spectrum of organizations' risk, including challenges and opportunities, and integrate those risks into the enterprise-wide portfolio view. And I think that's the biggest difference between enterprise risk management and traditional risk management and within the federal sector. So I think that within agencies, you're starting to see that difference start to pan out across the agencies.
And is it really, I like the idea of positive, negative. There's a bunch of different ideas within risk management, and there doesn't seem to be one set government definition, really, of risk management. Is there at this point, or... Todd, I don't know if you've had.
No, there isn't one set definition of risk management across the government at this time. There are standards and frameworks. I think one of the important things about having an enterprise risk management program is having a framework in which to run the program. ERM is not a collateral duty. It's like information technology. It's like finance. It's not as mature as those. But you need that framework, the governance, the roles, responsibilities, et cetera, to have that. There are, for example, the Committee of Sponsoring Organizations, COSO is what it calls, has standards for enterprise risk management. The International Organization for Standardization, ISO, has standards for enterprise risk management. And so what agencies can do as they're responding to A11 is to turn to those or folks like Doug and I who have expertise in this area to help them get started.
Right, and it's sort of an organic movement, and that's a little bit what I'm seeing is agencies have used risk management for a while,
yeah,
but they're starting to take it and embrace it and make it their own to some respects.
Yeah. I'd like to add to what Karen and Todd have said, too, in terms of the difference between risk management and enterprise risk management. To me, one of the biggest challenges we face is getting that difference understood, because there's lots of folks out there talking about ERM, and when you listen to what they're saying, they're talking about a myriad of different things. Mm-hmm. I've heard it used in the context of glorified internal controls. I've heard it used as only risks at the strategic level. I've heard it used as a functional risk that cuts across the enterprise, such as IT risk. I would argue that, as Karen said, it's really about developing a portfolio view of risk. And an analogy that I sometimes use is, if you think of all the different functional stovepipes or programmatic stovepipes or risks and so on as a brick, my point is that a pile of bricks is not equal to a brick wall. And what we're trying to do with enterprise risk management is integrate across those functional and programmatic stovepipes to provide the mortar that ties those together into an integrated portfolio view.
I think that's a really good one, because for me it was sort of a fabric of how agencies should really be functioning and looking at all of the different pieces and playing together at not just political level and not just frontline management level, but all the way through and in each different discipline as well.
And Jenny, if I can just add to what Doug said, it's also important to not only look at ERM as an enterprise function, but also to look at it as a two-sided coin. I think traditionally when people do start understanding that risk management is different from internal controls, that they start thinking the bad thing, like internal, how do you prevent something bad from happening? And one thing that we try to make sure people are realized as they're standing up enterprise risk management programs is risk, the other side of the coin is, how can you take risk to make something good happen? How can you leverage knowledge about a risk to make you perform better?
Well, and I think people hear the word risk, and that's like, I think of the big flashing danger sign or don't go there. And that's what people are thinking, instead of sometimes you have to take a risk and jump off the cliff, so to speak, to find out if something works. And so in some respects, this is what puts that out there. And one of the things, Doug, that I think you had just said was about internal controls and how it's not just an internal control. It's, or a glorified internal control. It's more than that. Mm-hmm. And so do you see this as an internal control, or do you see this as something, does it give you that, or is it something separate and more than an internal control?
Well, I personally think it's much, much more than internal controls. First off, you know, from the internal controls perspective, the word internal says certain things. And so we're talking about risks that emanate from the external environment as well as the internal environment. And secondly, this is more about controlling. It's about understanding, and it's not just about whether you can reduce a risk. In some cases, you accept the risk as it is. In other cases, you may decide we're simply going to avoid the risk by not going down a certain road at all. And to Todd's point, risk is not necessarily a bad thing. No one would go into business if they were unwilling to take a risk. The point is there's always, you're balancing risk against reward, if we're going to use those terms differently. And there's a broad diversity of understanding of this notion, because if you talk to the engineers at JPL, they understand that you don't put a lander on Mars without incurring a great deal of risk. But they're looking at the risk versus the reward trade-off. But there are other departments and other organizations in the federal government who are averse to risk and not even engaging in that conversation, which is something that I think the three of us are trying to facilitate.
Right, and that's a conversation that really seems to necessary to doing your day-to-day business and both long-term and short-term goals. Right. We're going to take a break first break of the show and stop here. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We just took our first break of the show, and we were talking about the difference between risk management, enterprise risk management, internal controls. And we talked a little bit about that agencies are starting to put this into place. And you'd mentioned some 2008 work and really what's going on. And Karen, when you first started talking, you mentioned that for the first time, OMB has put this into Circular A11, which is really not just an agency taking this on, but it's really a government-wide perspective of enterprise risk management. Can you tell us a little bit about what A11 is and why OMB has put that in there, what it is that they put in there?
Well, let me first start by saying OMB Circular A11 really encapsulate the budget planning process for government agencies. And the reason why it was instituted within A11, it has really to do with timing, because we're actually experiencing a time where a few circulars within OMB are being revised. And what we've seen is the perfect storm. You have the timing of the revisions of the circulars versus the environment and feedback from communities actually agreeing and seeing that this is something that needs to be implemented into this guidance broadly across government, so that not just one particular community or function within government understands enterprise risk management, but all functions across an organization understands that. And really, A11 serves as the catalyst policy, because what that does, it introduces enterprise risk management within the federal sector, even though it's targeted for folks who more than likely deal with budgets and performance management. We want to make sure that's actually expanded across the government. So not just performance and budget folks will see that in A11, but we want to move forward and implement the ERM within A123, and then take a combination of all of these things so that there's a cross-cutting understanding of A11 across the federal government.
And that's good, because it gives a broad perspective. Are there, Todd and Doug, I'll throw this out there, have agencies really started embracing this already? Is the A11 going to be helpful in putting this out there on a broader scale?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think overall the current state of the ERM in the federal government, to be honest with you, is relatively immature compared to other disciplines. But I'd say within that overall state, there is a very broad range of where agencies stand on that spectrum. You've got the Federal Student Aid Program in the Department of Education, the Defense Logistics Agency. They've both had risk programs now for, 7 or 8 years. Then you've got agencies like TSA, VA, IRS, Department of Commerce, who have had ERM now for 2-3 years. And the hope is that A11 will cause, to me, what OMB did by issuing A11 is they've upped the ante for federal agencies on risk
management. Well, they've said it's out there. It's something we expect you to do.
To me, A11 makes it very clear that agencies own their risks. They need to know what they are, and they need to have a framework in place to effectively manage those. And then A11 goes one step further and actually doesn't mandate ERM, but they do give very good reasons for why ERM is an effective way to get a handle on your risks.
And it does seem the timing is there, because we have seen agencies face an enormous amount of challenges, as you know, through budget cuts, through scrutiny, through other things. And so clearly, in my perspective, the timing is there for agencies to start looking at ERM and how you integrate that. Does it take a while for agencies to integrate ERM? It's clearly not something that you can put in place. So the agencies that have been doing this for 2 years, it's a work in progress. You know, even those doing it 8 years, is it still a work in progress?
I think it definitely is. I see progress. And before I continue down that road, let me back up slightly to your prior question. I'd like to congratulate OMB for taking this initiative to move forward. I am co-author and co-editor of a book that came out early this year, Managing Risk and Performance, A Guide for Government
it's
Decision
a great
Makers.
Book. Thank
you.
Put that out there.
And I authored the last chapter, and I had 10 recommendations in that chapter, and the 10th recommendation was to requesting or suggesting, if you will, that OMB put it into A11. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad to see that go forward. My co-author or co-editor has also had conversations over the years with OMB to do that. The reason that I picked, at least, A11 is because, like it or not, in the federal government, if you don't get people's attention around budget, you know, you don't really have a meaningful long-term conversation. So I think it was important for that reason. For another reason, strategic planning is in A11. And, you know, you don't have risks if you don't have objectives. So if you're going to talk about risk at an enterprise level, you really need to be talking about strategic goals, objectives, and those kinds of things. And so that seemed like a natural home.
And that's good. It does make sense, because you really do need to know, where are you going to face risk? How are you going to get to your end goal? And, you know, go along the way, and what are the positive things you're going to take? But one of the things we've got, you know, this framework, different frameworks out there. You've got the A11 that's putting it out government-wide, but it leaves it to agencies to figure out how to implement it. You know, and each agency, as we all know, does things its own way. They've got, you know, different goals, different processes in place. And so do agencies know how to do these frameworks? Is there because there isn't one framework out there and there are places they can go and look at this, how are agencies starting this up? Is there a person, you know, is there a person or a department that's owning this and putting it down in there?
Well, let me add this. Recently, I had started and I lead a federal interagency enterprise risk management group. And I really think that gets to the heart of your question, who's helping these agencies do this? This is great conceptually. What does this look like actually in practice within the government agencies? And one of the things we're trying to do from an organic and grassroots perspective is to bring together all the professionals and practitioners within the government in one place so we can have common discussions about design and implementation, so that no one feels isolated in trying to do this in terms of successfully implemented within the organization. So that's one of the things we've looked at and put into place. Fairly new, but it's been very positive, and it's been we've had a great turnout having the chance to share best practices and promising practices. In terms of frameworks, I believe that the feedback I've gotten from agencies suggests that even though one particular framework is not required across the government, they all agree that having a framework in place is a best practice. And regardless of the framework being used, whether it's ISO 31000 or the COSO ERM framework or even the GAO risk management framework, the target should be reaching the outcome of enterprise risk management, which is to ensure that a full spectrum of an organization's risk is taken into consideration within a portfolio view. I think that's the main outcome, regardless of the type of framework.
And, you know, and I think that's a good outcome. Sometimes we see in agencies, you've got components, you've got, you know, is it top down? Is it got to be something that you have to have a few champions in the agency? How does it really take hold? Because I see it as you've got to have somebody in some respects who, I don't want to say owns it, but you do to start it in there. You do have to have somebody who owns it and really wants to see it out there, but brings everybody else in.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jenny. You have to have an owner of the ERM program to push it forward, and that owner needs the support of top leadership at the agency. Like we've been talking about here, ERM is a framework. It's not a collateral duty. It's not a light lift. It's a heavy lift over years to do this right and reap the benefits both to strategic planning, resource allocation, and the impact that it can have on performance as you move forward. I would say, though, as you're implementing a framework, and I think most agencies are going to need expertise in help in doing that because it is a new discipline.
Well, and this is challenging
for them.
It's not easy.
And it's challenging. It's not easy. But I think one of the things that I experienced both at the VA and the IRS is we can't think that there isn't some form of risk management going on in programs and operations today. There is. And you have to respect that. As you try to bring in an ERM framework, you don't want to bulldoze the good work that's already there. You don't want to turn people off who might actually be good disciples that you can tap into because they have an interest in risk by just trying to force some framework down from the top. You need the framework, but you need to balance it with what's going on there today so that those two can meld together in that agency's particular culture. And quite frankly, even taking into account the agency's particular personalities of people in positions of power.
Right. And that really is an issue because some people do things, you know, in a certain way and you've got different management levels. And I sit there and wonder, what if you do have buy-in from part of the agency, but not everybody's really picked it up yet. You may have some, you know, as you go down, some senior executives, some managers who really want to be doing this or have been doing it already. Can it succeed if you're in one silo, but not in the other? I mean, if you don't have that buy-in from the top?
Well, I think that because of the maturity level of where ERM is within federal agencies, I don't think a lot of agencies are going to start off this doing holistically ERM. So one of the things we encourage is that start from where you are. Even though you may take one piece of the organization and develop it and make it stronger within an organization, that can be used as a springboard for actually messaging and supporting your story for the rest of the organization and encourage other folks that this is how it works, it worked in this area, and then actually promoting that throughout the rest of the organization.
Go ahead.
No, I just say that's just an approach that reflects getting an early victory, and I think that's a good thing to do. I'm sorry, Doug.
No, not at all. I was going to say that to pick up on Karen's thought. It's important to realize you don't have to start at the very, very top of the organization because that's a relative term. So to make an easy example of what I mean by that, to do ERM in the Department of Defense, you don't have to do it across the entire DoD. You don't even have to do it across all of one service. You could get down to a command or even a subordinate command. If you've got the ownership and the ability of the leadership to control the resources and the messaging and so on, you treat that as the enterprise. And in any large organization, even at a subordinate level, you are going to have internal stovepipes that will benefit from bringing together a more holistic view of risk. And I see enterprise risk management is doing a couple of fundamental things. One is you're bridging across the stovepipes, which requires a degree of collaboration that's above and beyond what is typically there. And collaboration infers a degree of openness and transparency that may be above and beyond what's there. So I see this as very much a cultural challenge, and I think for many organizations, it's much more the organizational change management issues that are going to confront them than it is bringing in new policies and procedures that reflect best practices.
Yeah. And that probably holds true with almost anything you're bringing into the government is, you know, is getting that culture there rather than just the framework in place. Because even if you put all the tools in place, if people don't use it, embrace it, it's not going to be as effective as it would. And we're going to take our half show break here, and we'll come back in just a minute. And right now, you're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
If you're a federal manager, you deal with a lot of information. Here's a tip on breaking through the noise. Join the Federal Managers Association to have a voice on Capitol Hill. And to get filtered news and information specific to managing your workforce, join the 50,000 other federal managers who already subscribe and read the free weekly e-report, fedmanager.com. I'm Todd Wells, Executive Director of the Federal Managers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. We've been talking about enterprise risk management in the government and having a good conversation about what enterprise risk management is, really how the government is promoting risk management. And when we left, we used the word culture, that it was a cultural shift. And I think that's really important piece because it does take different thinking and it does take convincing, if you want to use that word, people of why risk management and why having this view of, both the positive and negative sides of risk management. Why should it matter? Why should I do it? Why should I care? And so, to get there, you've got sort of the two questions. Do you have to both fund the framework and fund the program? Does it require that? And do you have to train people on it? Do you have to, how do you make that culture shift in the government?
Well, building an ERM structure will require an agency to adapt a new way of thinking. There's no doubt about that at all. But in a very good way to doing that. Because risk is often affiliated with loss or negative outcomes of failure and just overall seen as a bad thing, managers and leaders will have to work at reversing this mindset within their organization and train their workforce to see risk as a prelude to opportunity. It is important to communicate that risk is not always bad, but in the pursuit of opportunity, it can be leveraged to achieve the positive organizational goals and objectives set for the agencies. In terms of funding, we have found that it's common for agencies to make an upfront investment in ERM design and implementation to help jumpstart the process. This is either done through contract support or we've seen it done through reassignment of staff. But once that initial investment is made, it usually leverages off within the organization because the intent of ERM is to actually diffuse that competency and practice and knowledge throughout the organization at every level so that one, managers manage risk, and that two, all employees are engaged in the process. So the goal is not to staff up 10 to 20 people within the organization so that they become the risk management experts within the agency. At the end of the day, ERM stands for everyone is a risk manager. So in that respect, training will play an essential role, and there are a lot of creative and cost-effective ways to provide training to your staff.
Well, and I think risk management should actually save money in some respects, if you look at it that way, but also whether it's, saving you on your reputation, saving you on how you handle budget processes, saving you on how you run your programs. I mean, it really does, it's a safety net in some respects out there.
Yeah, and I think just playing off of your question to Karen a little bit, making that culture change, it has to start out with any culture change with small steps and trying to change minds and get people on board. And I think one way you can do that is just have a very candid conversation about, do you have risks in your program? the answer to that has to be yes, or you probably got the wrong person running the program. And then if the answer to that's yes, a good test I've found is to get the senior leadership team in a room and ask them, what are the top risks to this program? And unless you've gone through the discipline of an ERM activities, odds are you're going to get a bunch of different answers. And what that immediately can tell people as they're sitting around the table and looking at each other is, geez, we as a senior leadership team don't even have agreement on what could be the biggest risks that could eat our lunch, keep us from fulfilling mission and our goals and objectives. So you're almost creating that urgency or that need for, okay, now we realize we have a gap or a shortfall. How can you help us?
Well, and it's interesting too, because one of the things when I was reading the book that Doug, you were working on, and Todd, you have a piece in there too, is that not only do people not always agree on the risk, they don't also, the culture of getting feedback, open feedback, if you want to call it that, because to not only come to a consensus on what the risk is when you make a decision, once you decide what that risk is, you then have to be open to saying, wait, no, that might not be the way you do it. Maybe we need to look over here at the risk and get that feedback of what your decisions are. And that's a huge culture shift.
And while there's a difference that we talked about early on in this hour about the difference between ERM and risk management, I think that ERM is, if not an easy sell, is much easier if people truly have a broad, in-depth understanding of the value of risk itself. And far too many people, I believe, view risk almost either as an end objective. If they're really focused on risk, it's all about risk. But the majority of folks just view it as an afterthought. It's a check the list kind of a thing. If it's really staring us in the face, we're going to worry about it. But otherwise, they're focused on the balance between cost and performance, the budget trade-offs with the value of they define value as cost and benefit. I look at value, stakeholder value, and delivering on that as a three-way balancing act. What am I going to do for you, which I'll call performance? What's it going to cost? Because it's not just the federal government. Everybody has to deal with limited resources, so that's the cost-benefit trade-off. But there's a third leg of a three-legged stool, and that's the risk. And if you maximize the balance of those three together, that's when you maximize value to stakeholders. And I think once people understand and sort of internalize that message, then two things. One is, risk is no longer an afterthought. It's part of every business decision. And two, the value that ERM brings to the table is much easier to illustrate.
Well, and I think that's a good point of, you know, business decisions, and it's in any decision you make. And so I think people, you know, when I first started thinking about risk, and what really, I'm really a big fan of this ERM thing, because I think agencies should be, I'm sold. I've been listening to you guys and reading the book and learning more, but I've been seeing it that, because you can use it in human capital, whether you're managing people, whether you're managing a program, whether you're managing policy for the agency, you should be doing risk in all of that, because there is risk inherent in no matter what it is. It may be little risks versus big risks. I mean, you've got to make that distinction. But everybody can do that. And that's sort of where I see the training piece come in, because I don't think people necessarily understand what is risk, why does it matter to me, and why does it matter in moving forward. And so the training piece, I think, is critical. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that training's out there. Have you all seen that there's been any really embracive training? And I think of it less of probably some respect on the political leadership level, but also of your rank and file employees need to know about this too.
I think it's an evolving picture. And, you know, I don't know what our other guests think, but from my experience, I've done day-long and two-day training sessions on risk, and I've got some coming up. So there are pockets of that where people understand that we really understand the performance piece. We understand how we need to limit budgets and how to do that. We really don't fully understand the risk piece sufficiently to integrate it. And so there's our pockets of training, which I think is essential to building that cultural development that's necessary. But I don't see it yet as being totally broad-based across the federal government to the degree it needs to be.
Yeah, I think that the training piece is part of the overall sustainability of ERM within an organization, even relating to, you know, transitions of personnel in and out of an agency. It plays a key role in that. And I think because that comes up a lot in terms of, well, what happens to it if a particular personality or political appointee leaves the agencies, then
and
what?
That happens a lot.
What
you get the
changeover. That's part of business operations. So we see that the integration of ERM into the day-to-day business operations would help sustain an ERM framework. doing personnel and agency transitions and leadership, I think one of the biggest pitfalls that agencies must avoid is to overlook the need to push it down fast within an organization through the rank and file as soon as possible. Ideally, successful ERM would not be determined by who occupies leadership positions, especially when the discipline is integrated into an organization's management processes. It's important to get it into the management processes, things such as budget formulation. Introduce that into budget formulation where they are required, managers are required to look at their risks and pair that up with their budget requests for the upcoming fiscal years. It becomes a habit. And that's a recurring process that can be implemented within an organization. So I think actions like this reduces the risk of ERM being affected by personnel transitions.
And there you go with risk for ERM.
because it's embedded in ongoing operational activities within that agency.
Right.
And just to build off what Karen just said, as you're pushing it through the organization, I strongly urge people to think about doing it with such discipline that you get those early victories. Because ERM is no different than any other thing new that you're introducing into a bureaucracy. And that is, if there's a lot of talk about it, a lot of fireworks, big send-off, send you to training for a day or two, and then they don't see anything come out of it, it's going to die. And then it's going to make it harder the next time you come back and try to do it again. So I think teaming that, pushing it out as fast as you can, but doing it in a planned way, so that people can actually touch, see, and feel what a difference it's making in the organization so that they want to stick with it.
And if I might build on it, that's an excellent point, because we've all seen great ideas come and go. Total quality management, activity-based costing, business process reengineering, all these things are as valid today as they were when they were introduced. But they came and in many cases left because they were sort of the buzzword of the day. And training was provided, but they did not get, in many cases, institutionalized into the organization. So I think Karen's point is absolutely on target. It's more than providing training. It's about setting in place the policies, the procedures, the governance structures, and anything else that you can set in place so you're not dependent upon the leadership. Because we all know, for example, in the Department of Defense, if you're a senior military officer, you're typically in place 2 years or less at the general officer level. Political appointees, their average tenure is under 3 years. And these are long-term kind of initiatives. And if it's dependent upon the personality of any one person, we've already seen it in one organization, which I won't name, but they were an early leader in enterprise risk management. When the person at the top changed, things backslid totally. So.
And you see that across the government. That happens, as you said, with so many things. And so it's actually putting into place so that, as Karen said earlier, everybody's a risk manager, not just the one person who originally owns it.
And I think for those career executives who may be listening today, they are the key to this. I mean, you need that support from the political appointees at the top. But if the career leadership and management isn't taking ERM and owning it and willing to make sure it stays as people at the top of the agency come and go, it's going to be a lot more difficult to sustain it.
Yes.
Do you see agencies that, it's just as we're talking about owning it and putting it into place, do you see agencies putting not only the processes, but putting this into performance management in some respects of making sure that this is something that people think about, this is part of my portfolio, I have to do this, I'm, especially at the SES level, is this something that I need to own in that respect because it's part of my performance management plan? And I don't know if that's been out
there
in that sense.
I've seen that within my agency, Department of Commerce. Once you tell the stories, once you have, as Todd had mentioned, having the success stories and sharing that, it's a recurring behavior. It has to be repeated over and over again. And what I've seen is that those managers who engage on a frequent basis, it's not something you just put aside. It's something that's instituted into your day-to-day operations, senior staff meetings, agenda items, what have you. Once that starts to happen, I've seen managers take the initiative to populate risk management elements within performance plans at the senior level. So it's being done in agencies in parts and pieces, but I think that's the type of change we want to see over time, and it takes time to get there.
Absolutely, and getting people really bought into it.
And I think the key of buying people into it is it, because I was in government long enough to at some agencies see performance plans that were 30 pages long because everything that everybody wanted done had to get into a performance plan. And unfortunately, they became relatively meaningless. So I think that point of institutionalizing it, what leadership can do, earlier Doug mentioned governance. Governance is a key part of enterprise risk management. You need that structure there, a risk committee or something like that, a committee at the top that's dealing with the risk. What ERM gives the leadership team is a line of sight into what the risks are at the agency. They can then prioritize them. They can decide which ones to leverage, which ones to mitigate, which ones to accept. But that conversation has to be disciplined, and it has to occur on a recurring basis. And you want to get that conversation going at the top, but then you want to perpetuate it down through the agency. But keeping it going at the top forces those who have to report to that committee and stay on top of risks to do it, rather than just having it in a piece of paper that you see at mid-year and end of year, and you say, are you doing this?
And that's what I think is, there is a push a lot of times to put things into performance plans, say that'll make it stick, and it doesn't do it.
And I think one of the things that the federal government could do would be take a page out of Mars Corporation, which is Virginia's largest privately owned corporation. And there, in talking to a former risk officer, Larry Warner, when he was there, he indicated that if you were at Mars, you didn't get trouble for sharing a risk. You got in trouble for hiding a risk. And that is one of the cultural shifts that has to take place for ERM to be really effective, because it's about transparency and openness, not about avoiding the acknowledgement of risk, but about sharing the risk so that you can have that collective dialogue of how do we manage that? Which ones do we accept, transfer, mitigate, and so on?
I think that's a really good point about transparency, and I'm actually going to stop right there for a minute because I've got to take our last break, but I do want to come back and talk about transparency and talk about taking appropriate risk, because that is something we don't always talk about in the government. We're taking our final break on the show, and you're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is, GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering the last segment of our show. And when we left, we were talking about transparency and about acknowledging risk, because you can't hide it. And I think that's a lot of times when you see these scandals today, is that these aren't problems, you know, or you see a big program fail. They're not all of a sudden, that problem didn't materialize out of nowhere. There were some risks that people knew and some problems that they knew were out there, but people were maybe afraid to say that it was there and fail, because there's this fear of failure, because unlike a private corporation, you've got Congress, you've got the media, you have different oversight bodies that are out there watching what you're doing. And so failure maybe seems a little bit bigger, but maybe the risk would, if you're acknowledging it, failure wouldn't be so bad.
Right. I think there are different levels of transparency to sharing a risk. There's within your program, there's within your agency, there's with OMB, there's with Congress, there's with GAO, the IGs, and others. I guess when I was an executive in government, I always believed that being clear and open about the risks in my program was the best thing to do, because if they're there, they're real. And you want to share them, at least within your agency, for two reasons. Because one, you want people who may be able to help you, who are above, beside, or below you in the organization, might have ideas or might be able to bring resources, or they might know people they can bring in to help you possibly mitigate that risk rather than doing it by yourself. And the other, which is almost just important, is No one likes surprises. Whether you're an agency head, a member of Congress, or the director of OMB, or running a small program in the government, if you sit on a risk and it goes bad, then not only have you failed to get the help that you could have need to mitigate the risk, but everybody's going to be surprised, and that always makes it 10 times worse than what it otherwise could have
been. That's where you're going to find yourself on the front page of the Washington Post or someplace, unfortunately. So I certainly think, you know, it's a way to, I put it in quotes, of protecting employees a little bit, protecting your business or your agency by having a risk management plan, because it gives you that ability. If you know what your risks are and you're transparent about them, failure is maybe part of the game, but sometimes it's okay to fail because that means you tried something good. You tried that positive risk, an opportunity. And that's a piece, you know, we were talking about earlier, is changing the way agencies think about risk being positive versus negative, and having, or having employees think about positive versus negative, because you have to do that. But I think, you know, Doug, when we were on a break, you mentioned to me that there are these other communities out there that it's not just changing the mindset in the agency, it's changing the mindset of how we do oversight over risks and over failures. And, you know, you've got GAO, you've got the IGs, you've got these bodies that do that. And are they on the same page?
Absolutely. And you cannot have transparency or seek transparency from those below you if you're not willing to sort of, you know, walk the walk and show that you are being transparent with those above you. So I had one chief risk officer, for example, once asked me, well, how do I collect risks and not have to report them upward? And my difficulty with the question is there's a, you know, you're potentially, for those from whom you're trying to collect risk, you're sending the wrong message. When I was in government, I never worried about an auditor disagreeing with me so long as I could justify my course of action. Now, that doesn't mean that I didn't sometimes have findings that was an I gotcha moment and I said, oops, you know, we need to fix that. And I think the audit community, IGs and so on, play a very valuable role there. But too often folks in the federal government are afraid of having a difference of opinion of the IG. And on the flip side of that, too often there are IGs, some of them out there, certainly not all of them, who view their role in life as simply saying, I got you, rather than how do we work together to achieve the mission of the organization, which I would hope would be the ultimate goal of everybody in the federal government. So I just think that there is a need for that dialogue in the audit community. Now, I co-presented a conference earlier this week with Terry Graffenstein, who's the IG for the House of Representatives. And she is a leader in this whole area, that she is trying to work with those to be proactive and look at risks in the future and not just backwards. Because if you're an auditor looking only at what's happened and ignoring what the risks are in the future, you're trying to drive down the road by looking in the rearview mirror. And we all know what happens when that happens.
Well, exactly. You're going to, if it was me doing that, we'd know I'd be in a tree someplace. So, because we won't talk about growing up in Texas and my learning to drive there. But I think that's a good point, is risk management is not, you know, as I'm listening to you guys talk, it's not only about knowing where you are and where you've been, but looking two steps forward or 10 steps forward, you know, depending on what the magnitude of that risk or of the program is. We've talked a lot about training and frameworks, but one of the things I do want to make sure we get to before we leave the show is, what are some of the best practices out there, or where can listeners go to find those best practices? What resources are out there? Because I really do hope people are listening and saying, hey, this is something I need to take back to my agency, because we do need to start getting that framework in place.
Well, internal to the federal government, I mentioned the Federal Interagency Enterprise Risk Management Council, and that council is specifically designed to help an exchange of ideas, promising and best practices across the government, and giving the practitioners the opportunity to actually get real-life examples and experiences about how does this work within the federal sector. One of the advantages I've had since being at OMB on assignment is actually speaking one-on-one with a lot of these agencies, practitioner to practitioner, about what works and what does not work. And some of them have shared things that has not worked within the agency, and then they have some things that have worked. Some agencies are becoming more transparent, building a culture where employees feel more comfortable about sharing what risk they think the agency should look like. should look at, that is, and engaging senior leadership through 360-degree feedback so that employees feel that there's no disconnect between senior leadership and the rank and file staff. But from speaking with agencies, some of the best practices include you need someone to champion ERM within your agency. That's absolutely must within organization. You have to communicate ERM as a positive management practice that promotes reward and not just punishment. It's very important in the onset of doing that, that that's communicated. The other thing is that you need to institute a governing body within the agency that facilitates consensus building. You can't eliminate consensus building. As much as you think ERM is a maverick duty, but you have to have consensus within the organization, a level of consensus within. And then the final thing I found was that you have to articulate the value of ERM. And what we're doing, we're not saying that this is something new. This is not some new fad, buzzword. This is a business practice. We need to expand on what we're already doing to make it better. And there's a lot of thought that this is a very effective way to make that happen.
And in fact, private sector has been doing this for years. So I'm sure you guys have multiple best practices from them as well.
Absolutely. I have. Just to add to Karen's list of best practices, I'd say, you got to bring your key leaders along at the pace that's right for your agency. Can't overemphasize being sensitive to the personalities and the culture at your particular agency. Don't overpromise. As I'm getting into discussions with people about ERM, people are saying, okay, if I implement this, then I won't have any more crises. I won't have any more, big blow-ups or anything.
Get rid of risk.
A good ERM program can greatly reduce the chance of that happening, right. But there's no program that guarantees that something big isn't going to go wrong at some point in time. And last but not least is just think about getting some expertise in ERM. ERM is not do it yourself. You don't go to Home Depot and pick up an ERM kit and bring it back to your agency. It is a program. It requires a framework. It requires some knowledge, either get that within or outside the government. But again, you do need that expertise to help you establish the program.
There's and no get it going. Duct tape taping it together.
And if I can add two short
things.
One is I want to put a plug in for the Association for Federal ERM. Yep. I think that's an excellent source. We've got a summit coming up on September 9th and 10th. We're going to max out, but if people can go there, that'd be great. It's aferm.org is the website. Second thing I would like to say, I want to endorse everything that the other two have just said, but I would also say do your due diligence, because there's a lot of folks out there talking about ERM. I went to spoke at a conference, like I said earlier this week, and there are speakers up there who didn't really seem to understand it. So, large or small company, doesn't matter. There's good and bad, and do your due diligence.
And really, there's a lot of resources out there. So thank you all for joining me today. I'd love to continue this conversation at some point, circle back around. And thank you to the listeners today. That's all the time we have. FedTalk is brought to you by the Federal Employment Law Firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Have a great weekend.